Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's podcast. Well, we have a lot coming up between a breakdown of what new veterinary regulations mean for farmers and vets and a warning from Gardaí for young tractor drivers coming up to silage season. But as many of you will know, there is still a major debate around the Climate Action Plan and the role of agriculture with opposing groups on both sides of the argument. Well, the NGO Antoshka has long been seen on one side of the debate, with some people calling them anti-farming. As their representatives took part in an Oireachtas Agricultural Committee on Tuesday, Fianna Fáil Senator Paul Daly was quick to ask their spokesperson Ian Lumley why they felt they were able to oppose planning for Glanbia's processing facility in Bellevue, a move that Glanbia said was behind the introducing of capping on milk supply. Well, here is Mr. Lumley's response.
So when we're making a planning submission, particularly on an agricultural matter, we would be raising the issue is how is this application going to address and mitigate the ammonia air pollution issues? Because Ireland has exceeded the EU mandatory threshold for ammonia since 2016. So clearly we haven't had a regulatory regime in place that has addressed that. Had that been done, that wouldn't have happened. So when we're looking at further applications for agricultural intensification, which is 99% caused by ammonia, what management measures and mitigation measures are in place? Because ammonia is a public health issue. It has an immediate impact on people in the around an intensive agriculture facility. So it's an immediate public health concern.
Ian also commented on the engagement by farm organisations.
Would very much welcome the opportunity to engage earlier, but it's very disappointing to say that over many years we have very much sought to engage at a strategic level with the farming organisations. I'm not going to mention any in particular. And it's disappointing that instead of constructed engagement, we've had, and I put that into appendix one of our submission, we've had greenwashing. We've had, instead of seeking to engage with independent scientists in Ireland who have the international knowledge on greenhouse gas abatement, carbon soil management, and the issue of carbon sequestration in land, which I hope we'll be able to talk about in detail, as well as the carbon losses. We would have very much welcomed the opportunity to engage with the sector over the years, but that never happened. Instead, we've had the agricultural sector importing so-called experts in the United States, I'm not going to identify any, with very dubious claims on carbon sequestration, or using this common argument that if we don't continue producing, then somebody else will. And that is, first of all, it's an ethically unsound argument.
Throughout the committee, there was a to-ing and fro-ing. Here is Wexford TD Paul Gill.
I don't want to go at you. I just say in the last number of years, say a production dairy farmer where they're making up to 200 cows.
Oh, very much so. And I've also
seen
robotic farms in operation.
That's okay.
Yes.
Mr. Alumni, would you say that Irish farmers are very environmentally efficient when it comes to doing their work?
Well, we look at results, so we look at what the EPA is saying. Because remember, the EPA
I don't want a long rambling answer. I would just say,
Sinn Féin's Matt Carty also got in on the action.
I asked Mr. Lumley if he can name the countries that have higher agricultural standards for their farmers than Ireland.
So a few years ago, the Dutch government insisted that there be a reduction in the bovine number in their country, because of the fact that they were exceeding their emissions targets at that point.
I'm sorry for interrupting you. There may be different levels of production, but the question I'm asking is, in terms of the farmers that are in place, the standards that they are expected to adhere to, in what country are those standards higher than in Ireland?
Well, I don't understand. What do you mean by standards?
The rules by which they're obliged to farm under.
Well, we're all obliged in European law to have the same targets, whatever. The difference is in Ireland, we have not insisted that those targets be met.
Okay, but so that's a debatable point. But
One of the more restrained tit-for-tats was between Fine Gael Senator Tim Lombard and Antoshka's Rory O'Boyle on the subject of less and slurry spreading. However, Tim said he was disappointed by the answer from Antoshka, and here is O'Boyle's response.
Sorry, just to clarify my answer, the question was, what did we think about the amount of the emissions reduction in ammonia? I mean, Antoshka is not tasked or resourced to do that sort of work. I presume it would have come up with Chagas a couple of weeks ago when they were in on this, and they would have been able to give you a clarification on how much the ammonia emissions will reduce. As far as I'm aware, Chagas' projections are that ammonia or agricultural emissions will rise in the coming years. So whether the type of slurry spreading, as I said, which is a small part of the overall emissions profile, will have a material impact on that rising emissions trajectory, we can't say, but it doesn't sound like it based on that.
You've done no real acknowledgement of the major changes in agricultural systems, networks, how actual raw manure is spread, drilled into the ground instead of blowing up into the air. And I just take into consideration what we've seen, and like, to me, it was the biggest game changer we've seen in the last 5 years. I think general public, general communities have commented continuously, and I think they have seen really change in air quality, in particularly in the last 3 years. So I'm not being argumentative. I generally would find it disappointing that you haven't come out and said, this is what we need to do, this is the way forward, this is what we need to be starting to promote.
Okay, in that case, I can say that we have come out repeatedly to say that the marginal abatement options that Chagas have suggested will not contribute the type of emissions reductions that we need. They are marginal, and they are dependent on a number of factors, including not increasing the actual gross emissions before these options are taken into account. So in that regard, our emissions from agriculture last year, for example, went up. The previous year, let me see, would have gone down, but that wasn't the basis of 2018 being a very high number on the back of the drought that year. The calculations of the emissions is done by the EPA, and work is done by Chagas, and they are funded for that there. Antoshka, the advocacy side of Antoshka, is not funded by the government to do any of that work.
It was all summed up neatly by Chair of the Agricultural Committee, TD Jackie Cahill.
I think it would be remiss of me as chairman of this committee not to put on the record my views. And I thank very much the engagement from Antoshka. It was extremely informative. And I think, as some members said, you know, definitely there was others here with a different point of view. But that's what makes for the formation of good policy. And I very much appreciate your views here today. And it will go into the mix Are we farming our submission for the Climate Action Plan?
And there is more on that story in the paper this week. Now, news that farmers will be able to get back to the marsh ring from the 17th of May has been greeted with glee. They'll be like calves let out at spring. But for an advanced flavour of the sight, sounds and smells of the marsh, Shane Murphy caught up with newly appointed Irish Limousine CEO Ronan Murphy following the Society premiere sale on Monday. You can probably guess that they were in a marsh.
Joined here at Ronan Murphy, newly elected CEO of the Irish Limousine Calf Society. Settling in well?
Yeah, Shane, with the Society now for the last, since the middle of April, so really enjoying it, and good sale here today. So
yeah, I was just going through the figures actually, the average is up 302 years ago. Yeah. I suppose the only thing is same as the elephant sale. Numbers are back slightly, I suppose.
Yeah, a lot of sales and animals changing hand in advance of the sale. Again, you know, that's the sign of the times. We're in difficult times, COVID restrictions. And, you know, I think today, despite all of that, it's been a very bright, vibrant sale, very good for the breed. And really want to maybe thank just the breeders and everybody who's involved for actually facilitating those restrictions and conditions and still making it a very good sale. So we're very pleased.
And I suppose this is your first time to kind of get on the ground, I suppose, and meet the breeders. How's the reaction towards your...
Yeah, it was good here today to put a face to some of the names, you know, and to meet some of the people, albeit with our restrictions here. But it was great, and really enjoyed meeting them. And, you know, a good yard of stock here today and a really good sale, so very pleased.
And I suppose just the limousine breed itself, it's in a very good spot at the moment, market leader, I suppose, for terminal side of it. What are your kind of goals going forward? It's the biggest membership as well, I know that.
Yeah, we've a lot of positives with the breed. It's you know, it's had a very successful impact since its introduction to Ireland back in the 70s. There's a lot of areas we're looking at around things like the dairy beef side, for example. We're looking at the breeding programs. We're working with the council and the subcommittees on breeding, particularly to look at where we go from here. Yeah, a lot of exciting initiatives for the future. So really, really excited about it.
Super job. Thanks very much.
Shane Murphy there. Now, our deputy news editor, Amy Ford, is on holidays this week. But before she left, she very kindly left us with this report. As part of a study, a new map has classified farmland across the country. Amy Ford spoke to James Moran, one of the authors of the study, on what this map shows and means.
Shows us that we've basically divided the country into 9 broad landscape classes. And these are essentially classes that have distinct different environmental characteristics in terms of their broad land cover, land types, their soil types, their topography and underlying geology or rock types, you know. So that, I think that's the main purpose we wanted to bring this map together. It's really to show that the diversity of the Irish landscape at a very broad scale. And we were very much undertaking this project with land use policy and monitoring of environmental condition of land in mind. And it's to really show that one size does not fit all in terms of policy, and that when we are designing monitoring programs as well, we have to ensure that we take into account the diversity of the land situation. And so really that's the main point of study.
The study also scored each of the land types for high nature value, and James Moran explains what the researchers found here.
High nature value farmland separately under another project that was funded by the Department of Agriculture and in partnership with Chagas. That's back 2018, 2019. And what that found is that basically there's basically the high nature value farmland essentially mirrors the land use intensity or capacity of land in the country to produce food. So you have this sort of situation where you have in this map here, the intensive lowlands would be dominated by high food production capacity landscapes. And then as you move in uplands and move westwards and into more difficult high rainfall areas in the west and northwest, you have natural constraints on food production. But the way them agricultural landscapes have evolved, they have large amounts of farmed semi-natural vegetation that makes them very important from a high nature value farmland perspective. And so what we've done with this map is we overlaid the landscape classes on the H&V map, so that within each landscape of these broad landscape class, we have a nature value score essentially on a 1 to 5 scale. Now, the interesting point in this, I think, is across all our landscapes, even our intensified lowlands, we have scores up around 3, you know. So there's, and the highest score of a landscape for a high nature value farmland is the extensive mountainous regions, which have a score of 4. So this really highlights that all our landscapes, as well as having a production value, also have a nature value, have a carbon sequestration value, have a biodiversity value as well. But the balance is different between them, if you understand what I mean. So this allows us to maybe communicate that at a this sort of a landscape scale on various different classes. Basically comes back to, you know, certain lands are naturally advantaged from the point of view of deeper fertile soils for food and fibre production. Certain other types of land were basically what you would say naturally disadvantaged from the point of view of food production, and they were called disadvantaged areas in the past. But when you think about policy now that's multifunctional, we want food, we want fibre, we want clean air, we want clean water, we want flood alleviation, we want carbon storage. Then the land that was basically marginal for maybe production services is now highly valued for the other services. So that's basically where that is coming from. It's raising the potential of that land so that it's not marginal anymore, but it's also of high value for a particular type. And we just seem to call it high nature value rather than marginal, if you know what I mean.
That was Amy Ford there. Stay tuned because we'll be back just after this break.
Body blow to farm payments in next CAP. For more in your Farmer's Journal, here's Paul Mooney.
Department of Agriculture modelling shows 55,000 farmers face payment cuts of up to 40%. Will farmers with small entitlements gain anything? And find out how your farm payments will change over the next 5 years.
Plus, IFA makes €1.5 billion reps promise a red line issue for government, and why tachographs could double the cost of silage. This week's Irish Farmer's Journal is on sale now.
Well, the fine weather means that many farmers and contractors are gearing up for silage season even earlier than usual. However, farming still remains the most dangerous occupation, with many deaths and injuries relating to machinery. Gardaí and the Farm Contractors of Ireland have issued a stark warning to young tractor drivers in regard to their social media use. I spoke to Garda David Hennessy from Brough Garda Station in Limerick to find out what the initiative was all about.
Tractor drivers and machine drivers using phones to record themselves and maybe then transferring it onto TikTok or other types of social media, and just to make them and farmers and their contractors who are the bosses and own the tractors aware of the consequences of that, and that there can be issues with accidents and that, and just to make them fully aware. Sometimes people don't realise what can happen down the road, and they see maybe that it's a victimless crime type of thing, but we are the ones then that have to go and deal with the accidents afterwards and maybe knock on people's doors and deliver bad news and that. And there is issues down the road, I suppose, just to make people aware of that.
And what gave rise to the initiative? What was the thoughts behind it? Were you getting calls or concerns coming in?
Yeah, that's right. I suppose Brough is a very rural area. It's geographically about the same size as County Louth, and it's very much farming orientated area, part of County Limerick. And we have had issues where members of the public have been ringing us about tractors. They've seen lads on phones and tractors and that. And we, I suppose, trying to prevent it and get ahead of the curve this time of the year now. It's coming into tractor season, silage season. We're trying to get out there and maybe prevent something like that happening. But that's how it has come about, is that people have been bringing it to our attention, and I suppose we're just trying to prevent it as best we can.
His colleague, Sergeant Mike Brennan, also had this to add.
There may be an element of overconfidence in what they do, and I would just be concerned that they could be a bit more responsible in their approach to their driving, in that to consider everything beyond the steering wheel of these machines, because sometimes the more confident you are at doing something, the more complacent you can be. And it's not just outside on the roads, it's also inside in the work area, such as the farmyard or the farm fields. And you've got to be switched on all the time. And if you're distracted at all, there are consequences. And we're just asking young lads, as good as they are and as competent as they think they are, to be mindful of these other issues as well.
Garda Inspector Pat Brennan said that it could be rolled out to other counties over the summer months.
At this time of the year, when we're going into the busy time for the contractors, the traffic on the road will be predominantly tractor drivers. So yes, it's starting in the Brough district and county, and the Limerick county, and hopefully with a good PR and publicity, the word will get out and it will become a nationwide message. That's the important thing. It's about saving lives.
And there is more on that story in the paper this week, and the machinery section in particular. After this pandemic, we can all agree that we value the work done by nurses even more. But here, Nessa Robbins, Irish Country Living's home nurse columnist, discusses why she decided to leave nursing to pursue a career in food, but how, in the end, she managed to marry the two together.
So at that stage, I just took the decision to kind of stay at home with the kids. I had three at that stage. And
what was it like making that decision, Nessa? Was it scary, or was it something that you knew you should do?
It wasn't really, Anne, because I suppose in my head I had a million things I wanted to do. And I've always been like that. I've always had overflowing things that, oh, I'm mad to do this now. I'm mad to, you know, whatever it may be. At that stage, I can't even tell you where my mindset was when at that stage, only I knew life was incredibly busy. Like, you know, I had a newborn and a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. And as I said, then my dad, dad ended up moving in with us a while after that. But life was just really, really busy. And we were building, we had just finished building as well. So I kind of thought, yeah, it was just going to be really difficult after that to move back into work. But soon enough, I was into food at that stage, and I would always cook with the children or bake with the kids. And I thought, there's an opportunity now maybe to do cookery classes or with children. So I kind of went and I started exploring that idea. And I contacted our local enterprise board and all that, and kind of just saw what I needed to have in place to actually do that, or what would I need to do. So everyone was very helpful, and I say, like, to this day, everyone, sure, it's great when you want to set up something. There are so many resources there. There's so many people that have gone through different businesses that they're there to facilitate. So by the following summer, I'd set up my classes. Now, I had also done like a few days in Ballymaloe, but nothing major, only, you know, just a few days just to actually really
stage, the cooking was something that was taking your fancy.
It was. Now, I had no formal training. My mother was like, she was a great cook. And
did you grow up in a household where there was always baking and things being made?
Always baking. Oh yeah, always scones being whipped out of the oven, and yeah, just real, it was lovely, like real busy house. And then obviously the silage men and the whole lot, and big lots of food on the table. And yeah, so it's a typical farming house, I suppose. But and that was ingrained in me anyway, that I loved food, I loved cooking, I loved baking. And it was something that I wouldn't have thought of going down that route when I was in school. But 10 years on, then I thought, no, this is something now I could possibly make a run with. And no, it was good. It was good. I started those classes. And at the time then, I said, Dad was here and he had a lovely vegetable garden outside ready for us. And we had hens, so I would have classes with the children and you know, maybe bring them outside and we'd pick whatever, carrots or whatever, and then get the eggs and come in and make a carrot cake. And it was all very relaxed, and you know, it was great. It worked out really well. Now I really enjoyed it. But then of course mine were very small, and then I was soon enough then again pregnant with Millie. So it was good though. It all worked out well. And I went on from teaching kind of children's cookery classes then to advance to doing classes for teenagers. And then eventually kind of I started doing demonstrations then for adults. So it was nice. It was a nice intro into the whole food side of things. And I enjoyed it. And there was plenty of interest kind of in the Midlands anyway. There's plenty of interest in classes. And I would also make jams and cakes and, you know, anything really to make an extra few bob. So and I would sell those then at the classes too.
The full interview is available on Irish Country Living. And last but not least, myself and my colleague Niall Hurson got together to discuss what changes to veterinary regulations will mean for farmers and vets. I started by asking Niall for an overview of what was going on.
Basically, the whole COVID-19 pandemic and just focus around AMR has really brought the use of our antibiotics and warmers into focus. As Caroline Garvin, a senior inspector with the Department of Agriculture, says, that some people view AMR as the next global pandemic and really need to tighten our use. And for the department's sake, they need to be able to see exactly what's been used, who's given it out, i.e. the vets, and how the farmers are using it, how much they're using on farm. So even just for looking at how we trade with other countries, Caroline highlighted that that Ireland is getting challenged on not having this data readily available when trade missions come here. And even the fact that new medicines aren't coming onto the market that often. So like if some of our medicines that we have now become they become out of date because antimicrobial resistance no longer can be tackled by these medicines we have, like, that's a disaster really for our industry here.
Yeah, and I guess it was kind of interesting what you said on the trade mission front, because I remember being in the Netherlands and they had a system like this already in place where you could look at a farm and you could see exactly what kind of medicine had been issued to individual animals on that farm. And while it was a government database, people could actually apply to look at how much prescription or how many prescriptions were being issued to a single farm if they had animal welfare concerns or something like that. So we did actually ask them as well if Board B or other bodies would get access to this database. So I'm sure there are a lot of medical companies out there who'd pay money for it, but that's not going to be the case, is it?
No, lucky enough. As you said, the data has been in place for over 20 years in other countries. But no, the data that the department will have on this cloud, that as they're calling it, will be only for department use. The likes of Board B and other outside parties will not have access to it. It will basically it'll work the same way as your hard copy that farmers get now, except it'll be all online and it'll be all in one place for the department of ease of access to, as I say, to see who's giving out the medicine and who's using it and to identify any misuse of the medicines.
Yeah, I guess for the farmer who might not be sure of the animal's number when they go in to get the prescription and has a favorite cow, Betty, that's 435 and has been using Betty 435 for every prescription, it'll definitely tighten up on that. And it's going to tighten up on but the one I guess that's going to affect every single farmer is the wormers. So in terms of you going in and being able to buy, say, your liter of whatever kind of white dose that you're using, you're essentially going to have to prove that you need that liter for all the animals in your herd, because they want to tighten up on blanket treatment. And there was kickback to this, and we heard that in the Oireachtas as well last Tuesday. But it's something that Colm Ford, the principal overseeing veterinary regulations in the department, talked about with you, isn't it, in terms of the kickback from farmers and what he thought about it?
Well, yeah, like Colm sees it as a positive thing, really. As he says, the department will now be able to see every prescription issued in the state, and it really will streamline it for them. But he also sees that it will give a lot of power back to the farmer. They have the option to choose where they buy their medicines. They can buy it from a practice, a licensed merchant, the pharmacy. It's completely the farmer's choice. And also, he says, the paperwork around medicine use will be more streamlined. It's going to be online. You're going to get texted a code to your phone. You know, you won't have to be dealing with paper trails, any physical records if you don't want to. There's also another option. You can hang on to the paper side of it too if the online isn't your thing. But he sees it as a complete streamlining of the whole system as a whole.
Yeah, I guess there were some complaints now from the Veterinary Ireland president, Conor Geraghty, who said that they haven't had any engagement from the department. And he's concerned as well about kind of smaller rural practices and that could be overwhelmed by the new system. And he pointed out to the fact that rural Ireland, its connectivity isn't fantastic. And if you're out calving a cow over a weekend, it might not be the simplest thing in the world to upload an electronic prescription. But Conor kind of had a potential solution for that as well, didn't he? Or Colm?
Exactly, yeah, Colm. He says in the end, it's ideally it'd be instantaneous and everything would just go online as soon as the medicine changes hands. But they suspect end up giving a reasonable time frame to let vets and farmers alike upload any data. Something similar in line with TB test results That's the model that the department is looking to replicate for this new system, because in reality, you know, with the internet mightn't be great, or you might be away from your practice for a certain period of time, but you're going to have to allow for a certain amount of leeway. So even a new app for vets to upload the information from their phone is also being put in place to just streamline the whole process.
Yeah, well, interesting times ahead. Okay, now, thanks very much.
Thanks, Anna.
We also have more on that story in the paper this week. Well, that is it. Thank you very much for tuning in. And if you have any comments or suggestions for the podcast, you can just email podcast@farmersjournal.ie. I'm Hannah Quinn Mulligan, and the sound engineer is Claire Nash.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.